We are back with episode 521 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and wait a minute, is this a new simulation? I feel like I've gone back in time.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Is this one of those newfangled radio shows I hear about?
And this is Bronson from Australia. And man, they've really retooled Mad Men this season, haven't they?
Oh, if only. Yes, we are going to be obviously talking a bit about Agent Carter, which is a major story or miniseries that has been spooled out in the MCU this mid-season. But before we do much of that, Edmund, if you could please give us a disclaimer.
Certainly. Our policy is to talk about just about anything that happened in these episodes, even if it did happen 60 years ago. So you will naturally be spoiled. But as ever, we try and give you a little bit of time to catch up before we do that.
Absolutely. And, well, why don't we just go ahead and get right into it?
Woohoo.
Let's see. While I'm looking at this real quick, Ronstum, I was going to ask you, what would be your wild card pick for this week?
My wild card pick?
Yes, of the shows that are left, which one would you pick?
I was just going to make a regular pick and say, let's talk about Agent Carter.
You got to go with the parlance here, man. Okay, so Agent Carter, yes, that's a great choice. Let's go ahead and run the promo.
First, there was Sidney Bristow. Then, Olivia Pope. Now, in the tradition of ABC's most powerful women, comes Peggy Carter. She'll bring men to their knees.
Can I be of any further assistance?
Because she's a one-woman army.
Love the hat.
Take one out for me.
Marvel's Agent Carter, a 7-part television event. 2-hour premiere Tuesday at 8, 7 central on ABC.
All right, we have a couple episodes here. If you don't mind, go ahead and doing the recap.
Okay, we want to do both episodes at the same time, or...?
Yeah, we might as well, since they aired one right after the other.
Sure thing. So, Agent Carter, Season 1, Episode 1, Now Is Not the End. Howard Stark is framed in the opener of this action-adventure series based on characters from the Marvel Comics. And Season 1, Episode 2, Bridge and Tunnel, A Deadly Weapon Falls into Enemy Hands.
Indeed. And just to go through the usual here, we have the first episode, Now Is Not the End, got an average of 8.1, and the second episode, Bridge and Tunnel, got an average of 7.9. So, very close. I think the divergence was actually on... we kind of had a little bit of a spread here for each of them, but the fact that they were so close is actually a pretty good showing. Bronstum, it seems like you and Gary both liked the first episode more, and I was kind of more favorable towards the second one, so interesting how that panned out. What are your thoughts, Bronstum, in general? I mean, you gave it pretty good scores for the start of a miniseries.
In general, I thought it was just... It opened incredibly strong. It took everything I liked about this character and this this particular slice of the Marvel Universe, and it gave them their proper due. I remember watching the Agent Carter one shot on I think it was the Iron Man 3 DVD, I think, maybe, or it was one of them, I think, and just being surprised how well the character worked as a real solo unit. I thought she was a great character in Captain America the First Avenger, but she was part of this ensemble, and the one shot was really about having her not only be front and center but really be on her own. And she kicked butt and took names and made the made Bradley Whitford look like an idiot. And the show just, you know, it really has it has more of that. It has it feels like the Marvel comic book version of that time period. So you know, the kind of attitudes you would expect that would get thrown at a female secret agent are all present, but in that slightly like cartoony way you would expect from a comic book kind of thing and a sort of pulpy period piece. The tone of the show, I thought it was very fun, was very actiony. What it reminded me of was, more than anything, was Alias. The first couple of years of Alias, where she's the double agent, and I mean that in the absolute best way, because I loved Alias in those first 2 years, but it was good fun. I love the styling of it. I love these side characters, and there were enough of, you know, a bunch of little Marvel Easter eggs that even I got, not being a huge comic person, but being a big fan of the film series and of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. But and still, absolute best reason, the reason why, you know, the show is either going to succeed or fail was Hayley Atwell as Peggy Carter. She's fantastic. She's given the chance to breathe in that character a little more than she has in than she was in the film, where as much as I really liked the character, as much as I thought they made her you know, fun and awesome and stuff like that, she has a function within Captain America's movie, and putting her front and center and stuff like that, just I feel like I'm saying the same thing over and over again. It's just like, the show is called Agent Carter, and Agent Carter is the best thing about it. And the all the things that were happening around her were pretty darn good in their own right as well. There's room to get better as the miniseries goes on, and I really hope that they decide to continue it. Assuming that the show stays at least as good as it is, but yeah, this is a really, really strong opening.
Yeah, the thing that I think this benefited from was not just the one shot of Agent Carter, but the fact that really Captain America: The First Avenger is the lead into this. And they do a very nice job of that at the very beginning of the first episode to kind of lead you right from one into the other. And it sets the tone. And I think Henry, when he wrote up his review for it, even said that in retrospect, Agent Carter, the miniseries, gives even more gravity and meaning to the first Avenger, because so much of the action for Captain America, you know, moving into the Winter Soldier, moved into the present and became so important to the overall universe that it kind of makes the first Avenger seem almost quaint by comparison, kind of extraneous. This gives it more scope. And the fact that Agent Carter has connected previously in the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to current events, it now feels so much more cohesive and as part of a whole. So Agent Carter is a very nice connective thread for the MCU. And like you said, Hayley Atwell, having already played the character a couple times previously, just walks right into the role. If anything, I feel like the writers are trying to catch up with her, not her trying to catch up with the writers.
I kind of want to walk back to the thing I said earlier. The vibe I get from the show is definitely more Alias than anything else, but at the same time, I can also see a bit of Angel in there as well. That you're taking a character who was in the universe previously, but whose main function was as a love interest, and making them the hero of their own little thing, and just being awesome right off the bat.
Yeah.
That said, I feel like I'm probably in good company when I say Hayley Atwell, in my opinion, slightly prettier than David Boreanaz.
Just a bit.
Yes.
Just a bit. Where's the dress better? Yeah. I didn't think he wore the dress as well. Gary, what were your thoughts?
I agree. She's much better as a blonde than he is.
Yes. Well played, sir. Because it's actually true in flashbacks. Anyway.
I liked it a lot, and you mentioned some of the distinctions between the two episodes. And there was some character change between the first and second. The first, she was somewhat working with her team, I guess, group, if you want to call it that, the SSR. And in the second episode, she was much more on her own. And while I'm not happy to say this, it's through no fault of mine, the second one was much more historically accurate, where she is put down as a woman in this role. Coming into the series, I had hoped that she had such successes during the war that she was a superstar, for lack of a better word, where even though she was a woman, people would take her seriously because she had achieved so much. But as we start to see the series unfold in episode two, she experiences what most women experienced. They even made one of her girlfriends even made a reference of it, that somebody came back and, you know, she lost her, you know, lost the job and had to show somebody how to do the job that she had been doing, riveting. I think they actually mentioned it. And, this was very historically accurate, and I was a little sad to see it from a story point of view, because I didn't want to see her relegated to this sort of backdoor spying, if you want to call it that, where her and Jarvis are forced to skulk around her team and sort of lay breadcrumbs out, and we're already seeing where there's already awkward tension as a result of that. And I would rather go forward with story rather than, are they going to find out I'm really doing good? I mean, she's an agent. She's supposed to be doing good. The fact that she has to hide all this is a bit sad. Also, this whole premise that Stark is a traitor and no good and stuff like that, we're still several years away from, McCarthy-style witch hunts, and the word communism wasn't brought up once, but it just seemed out of place in this post-immediate World War II era to have someone who was so involved in the war effort to be declared a villain within 1 year I mean, we were still bringing in Nazis from Germany at this point to work on rockets. I mean, it seemed a little odd that they were going so hard against Stark in the time frame that's set up. Another 5 years from now, it wouldn't be surprising, but in 46 it is.
Gary, yeah. Just since you're talking about Stark, I mean, your opinion and everybody else's, I thought that actually Stark and the way that I think it was Dominic Cooper who played him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I actually felt like his performance was one of the weakest of that episode. It took a little bit away from it, in my opinion. Especially against Hayley Atwell, he seemed just kind of very rote in his delivery. It didn't really work for me.
Yeah, it was a very stereotypical performance. They really, you know, it was very, I'm trying to think of the exact word to phrase it, but it was a very almost jingoistic, Howard Hughes disconnected from the world. Yes. Oh, I'm doing bad. Oh, do what you can to save me. I'm going to, I'll be off. And it really wasn't much of a characterization or a character in this particular, particular episode. But then again, they really haven't been giving Stark Sr. much of a role anyway. He's much more of a, sort of just a convenient plot device to throw technology development into, rather than ever fleshing him out as a character. I think the most we got out of him was was the old black and white movie that played during Iron Man 2, which wasn't even played by Dominic Cooper. It was played by the guy from John Slattery from Mad Men. So we really haven't got much from Dominic Cooper as far as Stark goes, other than
he was in the first Avenger. So that's about that's it, yeah. I just felt like he did much better in the film than he did, I think, in the show so far. But who knows? There may be a reason for that.
It's a glorified cameo in that first episode, really. Like, Howard Stark is MacGuffin, but he's really not central to the as a character. He's there for like what, a scene, maybe two. It's the difference between Hayley Atwell walking back into the character when it's called Agent Carter. Like, she's very clearly going to be the lead. She's very clearly going to be the person carrying this thing. And Dominic Cooper coming back to do, a day or two of filming for a movie that he did, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, you may be correct in saying that the amount of personal engagement on the part of the actor would have been much less than Haley's excitement of being really the lead here. And certainly, I mean, here's the irony, at least for me, and Edmund certainly will get your opinion in a moment, but for all the noise that we've heard about, what's going to be the first film with, female-fronted film from either Marvel or DC, and the kind of criticism that they've gotten for it being, a few years from now, and, why is there no Black Widow film, and so on and so forth, and meanwhile, there's the Agent Carter, the miniseries, which will be longer than either of those films, and has easily a more substantial character in terms of a perfectly normal human being having to stand up to, not just overt sexism, but just the kind of bizarre espionage world of post-World War II in the Marvel Universe. It just amazes me that it flew under the radar for a lot of people, that, and yet right now there are people that, quite frankly, are saying that they're enjoying this more than they have or did the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. A lot of those people haven't seen the second season, so I can't exactly say that they're giving it a fair shake, but there we are.
Gary, to respond to some of your comments, regarding like the gender stuff and the sexism and stuff like that, I don't think this show could get away with not addressing that, let alone addressing that in some sort of major way. Especially given like what John talked about, the climate that we have today regarding people wanting to see that kind of that representation in pop culture and popular media. Superheroes are the biggest thing in movies right now, and there's this big question going on of just like, well, yeah, there's tons and tons and tons and tons of superheroes, but it's still so rare to see one that's of a superhero of color, a female superhero, someone who's not just a white dude. And so Agents of Carter comes along set in that universe, and it's not only a female character who is just kicking ass and taking names, but having to deal with the with gender imbalance and all that sort of thing. It's it not only speaks to the period it's set in, albeit in what I think is a bit of a cartoony kind of way. I think that like which fits in sort of the general aesthetic of the series and of the slice of the universe it's taken from, but it's also in a roundabout way addressing the thing that people are picking up on, and rightfully so, with superhero medium in the present day. Like I think it not only has to, but it's going to be a more positive thing for the show in the long run.
Oh no, I agree, and I'm glad to see it. It just, you know, from the previews and stuff, I didn't feel she was going to be working from this, I'll call it an underdog kind of role. I thought she was going to be a more, you know, let's round up the guys and go get them. She's got to go do it herself now, which I don't dislike the premise. It just, from the promos, it didn't seem like how that was being appeared. Also, you have this tendency back and forth, depending on, I don't know if it's writers or studios or whatever. You know, at some point they're almost ignore history. For example, they'll include black, you know, actors in a role where historically there would not have been a black person in that role. Where you know, and so they'll totally gloss over any sort of racial or even sexist prejudice very lightly, or ignore it completely. But in this, they are taking it head on, and it became a surprise given how they had sort of advertised the show being. I was a little surprised how accurate they are being. I thought it was going to be a much more glossy, cheesy.
I never got the impression that would be glossed over, that wouldn't be part of the DNA of the show. But then again, I watched the Agent Carter one shot, and that's. The Agent Carter one shot is like, it does in sort of 5-10 minutes what both these episodes do over the course of like 2 hours of it. Really hits home the fact that as much as she's fighting bad guys, she's also fighting this real institutional sexism. The one shot has, as I mentioned before, Bradley Whitford as this the leader of the SSR unit, team, office, whatever, where she's stationed, who just treats her like a glorified secretary.
Captain America prostitute.
a bit of that, but the scene from the one shot that stuck out to me is that he goes up to her at one point and she's like, yeah, we got a lead on this this bad guy that we're chasing down, so we're rounding off everyone available so we can go out and get him. And you can just see Carter kind of that really like try to restrain her own reaction of, oh yes, I finally get some action. And the guy's like, yeah, so you'll stay here and man the phones, have fun. And then, of course, she gets a better lead and goes out and takes out the guy single-handedly. You know, really, like, 5 minutes of pure badassery. If you like the first one, all our listeners, if you haven't seen the Agent Carter one-shot, go and find it. It's awesome viewing, and you can see why the positive reaction to it would have gotten this miniseries made, which I really hope becomes a full-on series in its own right.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely deserving of that. Edmund, what would you add to all this? I know that we went pretty long on it so far, but anything that we haven't talked about that you want to add?
Well, I mean, one thing that struck me, I mean, I do see the points in terms of the storytelling beats relating to some of these more contemporary series, but one thing I really loved was how much they really did manage to duplicate the feel of an old 40s movie or serial, and certainly thinking back to that era where you did have these very, very strong female characters, the Barbara Stanwyck's, the Joan Crawfords, the Betty Davises, and this even just really felt like it was coming right out of that tradition. I think, well, I certainly wasn't surprised to see the sexism in there. I was a little taken aback at first at sort of how boorish they were and how over the top, but then thinking about it in terms of those old Saturday serials, or as somebody just mentioned, the actual Marvel comics of the time, or reflecting that time, it did make a certain amount of sense. Yes, exactly. And certainly, I mean, I've been saying for, you know, I really hope it does go to series, because I've been saying for years that Ember Joe Catch just really, really deserves to be on a series again. So I thought he did a great job as the one decent guy, because he's also an outsider himself because of his disability coming out of the war. yeah, it, yeah, I was just very, very impressed. And, you know, if anything, I mean, you know, I was the, I think one of the few people who kind of just, I had trouble sort of distinguishing between the two of them, but just wound up scoring them the same because, an eight on both, because they were little things that niggled at me, but overall, I just really enjoyed the heck out of it. And with the Howard Stark, I mean, I just took it as, you know, given the Howard Hughes angle, and it's just, he's always been the Maverick and rubbing people the wrong way, and you know, so the moment they can latch on to anything to try and knock him down, they're going to do it.
Yeah, well, I gave the first episode a little bit lower because of the Howard Stark performance, Dominic Cooper, and then the second one I gave a little bit higher because that whole juxtaposition of Peggy Carter beating the hell out of the guy while the Captain America radio show was going on in the background was just brilliant.
That was fantastic. I love the recurring device of that Captain America serial, and just the, what was it, the Betty Carver?
Yes.
And just you. This is why Hayley Atwell is fantastic in this role, because I can imagine a lesser actress just being like very, like eye roll and visibly frustrated like that every time that comes up. Whereas Hayley Atwell plays it like she hears it, she knows exactly what it's meant to be, exactly who they're representing and stuff like that. And she's having that, oh, you've got to be kidding me reaction, and trying to suppress it, like trying to keep that bottled up and not let anyone think that it's bugging her. Those moments are great fun.
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't think she's got anyone to bounce it off of. Like, oh, can you believe that? Because she doesn't have a shared experience with, you know, with pretty much anybody. We might see, I think we've seen previews that the Howling Commandos are going to come back into to it a little bit. So maybe, you know, then she'd have somebody to, quote, commiserate with. But really, you know, she can't even, like, look at somebody and roll her eyes because nobody would get that, you know, it's cheesy.
Yeah, there's a real lone wolf quality of the character that's both the result of the times, the institutional sexism and stuff like that, the reason that people aren't taking her seriously, and the fact that there's really no one around her who's been through even remotely the same experience. Similar experiences, but not quite the same. And hopefully that's going to be part of the arc of the miniseries. Like, I mean, Jarvis seems like he's going to be a really good foil, and I really hope those two become good friends over the course of the show.
Were you getting an Avengers vibe out of them?
Now that you
And when I say Avengers, I don't mean Marvel.
No,
we get it. You just want Hayley Atwell in a cat suit. I know. I will say this for Jarvis too, is that that character, when it came to grading the two episodes or scoring them, I thought that he was having a little bit of a rough introduction in the first one. Not bad by any means, but he grew a lot in the second episode for me. The interaction between him and Carter just was brilliant, and I loved the characterization that they give him. And just I was watching it with my wife and my daughter, you know, when he was introduced, both of them perked up and were like, "Wait, it was an actual person?" It was like, yeah, you could see, like,
computer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's just, this is what I mean by the show doing such a beautiful job of not just giving Peggy Carter her own series, but also just fleshing out this universe.
Well, yeah, even the Captain America flashbacks in the movies were well placed, and I didn't think they were gratuitous at all.
Did you catch the cameo by Vanko Sr.?
Yes. And that was also a nice little touch because
Roxanne Oil was in there a bunch.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were others. I'm wondering if we're going to see Toby Jones at some point.
Basically that's like all of the Iron Man movies in one respect or another now being name-checked. the Avengers or the Captain America film, of course. And we'll have to see if there's anything else. I mean, those are really the only ones that really reach back that far into the story. And of course, there's already connections with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and its backstory.
Oh, and just as a side note for everybody, Roxanne wasn't pulled out of thin air. It's been a sort of foil for Captain America Iron Man for several years throughout the 80s and early 90s as a behind-the-scenes protagonist, not quite at the level of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that, more like corporate espionage and stuff like that. So they've been around for a while. There's even
a... One of the first shorts, Marvel one shots, was Coulson stopping at a Roxxon gas station, And I think Iron Man 3, the climax takes place on a big Roxxon oil tanker.
Yes, that's exactly my point, is that they do name check basically stuff from all three Iron Man films just in these first couple episodes.
And Exxon did sue Roxxon at one time, Marvel one time for it, and it was thrown out. So. Just as a
well, Spike has a lot of money, you know, you can pay for a lot of lawyers. Again, guys, any last thoughts then on Agent Carter? All right.
Just keep it awesome. I loved seeing an Automat again. You don't get to see those that often. I have my dime right. Ready for my pie.
Yes.
Points for the casting of Lindsay Fonseca, of course, as well.
I did not recognize her in her first scene.
Yeah, it took me a little while in the first episode for me to realize, I'm like, why is that voice so familiar? I know who this is, and it threw me off completely. But and it was kind of nice to see that that casting. I know that Bridget Regan is also supposed to show up at some point.
And what do you call it? Do you reckon that the casting of Enver is a deliberate thing? Like it's going to be his grandson or something who was the cop in New York?
Nice. Quite possibly. I mean, they've made stranger connections.
I really hope those extended scenes aren't canon from the Avengers. In that case.
Hmm. Let's see here. Gary, I think you are next up to choose a quote-unquote wild card.
Oh, we're running late on this show, I think, aren't we? Anyway.
Oh, that's okay.
Oh, no problem. Let's go with one of my surprises for the week, Star Wars Rebels.
Okay, no problem. And here's the promo.
When Ezra follows the Force into a hidden Jedi temple, he must face his darkest fears. Find out if he has what it takes.
Apparently, someone's not quite ready to become a Jedi.
Will he see the light? Or fall victim to the dark side? Star Wars Rebels returns, brand new Monday night at 9 on Disney XD.
All right, Gary, if you could do the recap.
Our one of the Star Wars universe is... starts his training is pretty much what this episode consists of. I was surprised by it in a lot of ways, mainly as I've noted with sadness, the new Star Wars Rebels has fallen from far from the Clone Wars. It's typically a much more child's fare than anything else. But this episode actually harkened back to a lot of the best parts of the Clone Wars for me. You know, we had that sort of sense of mystery that we didn't know everything, and a lot of times lately, Rebels, they're throwing out all the sort of tropes of Star Wars that any casual fan would know. But, you know, we're getting into, they started mentioning things like Jedi holocrons and the crystals that it takes to make a Jedi lightsaber, much more detailed in-universe things that Star Wars fans would really appreciate that they threw in there, and we did. Whether or not they can keep up this type of more, I'll call it drama-centric, but by no means is it, that crazy a drama, would be surprising given that Disney does want the lighter fare. But I was really happy that they sort of snuck in one of the old shows into this series. I see you gave it a little bit less than me, John, but do you have the sense of what I was talking about? You've seen the other series as well. I had a sense that it grabbed a lot more of that.
Yeah, this was, this was probably me still perhaps holding on a little bit to the more quote-unquote juvenile bent of the series, but I felt like this was one of the strongest episodes yet. I mean, it came in at an average of 8.5, which is pretty high for this series, and I loved the little references to what I guess is now, in some respects, the old extended universe stuff, but that they wound up really folding in. It was a good reference back to some of the same themes as the infamous Dagobah cave encounter in Empire.
Yes.
And it worked really well for me. And I mean, yeah, there were a couple little things here, plot conveniences, but quite frankly, nothing that isn't already, you know, kind of stock and trade for Star Wars in general. I was surprised that they brought in so many things from the extended universe that were not necessarily canon that now they have established as so. It was, like you said, it was a nice callback to things for older fans that, you know, they could appreciate. And I am curious if this is on top of, you know, that two-parter that they had before the winter break, that was a little bit stronger as well. You know, we've had a good run of three episodes now. Is this the tone that they're going to go with going forward, or are we going to see them step back into, you know, the more bland type of material that they had for a bit of a run there earlier on? But no, I've really enjoyed the last three episodes. I think between the two of us, we've given it eights and above but for the last three.
Well, I get the sense that whoever the powers that be are loosening up on Dave Filoni, the producer, co-writer, etc. He wears a lot of hats for this production, that they've loosened things up a little bit, and he's sort of getting back into more comfortable territory, I think, which is great. I mean, that even the, you know, the previous run of Clone Wars, it wasn't that they were getting bad ratings. It was the whole acquisition of Lucas and getting off Cartoon Network that precipitated the demise of that series. It wasn't as much as a format issue as we've complained about lately with Rebels. So maybe they're swinging back just a little bit the other way now that they've had a chance to settle it.
That's right. I'm hoping that it continues. All right, well, to round us out here, I'm going to just go down the rest of the content, and what we have is The Good Wife, Season 6, Episode 11, Hail Mary, which between Henry and Nadim, this one came in at a 9.0. In the recap here, Carrie hires a prison consultant to prepare him for incarceration. Meanwhile, Alicia practices for the state's attorney candidate's debate. And I guess a person of interest must have been awfully good in order to overcome that 9, right? So that gives you an even better indication of how good Person of Interest was this week. There was also Resurrection, Season 2, Episode 10, Prophecy. The recap here being, Arcadia loses power when a violent storm hits, and at the same time, the Langstons and Bellamy search for Jacob and Margaret, who seem to have disappeared, and a mysterious stranger arrives in town. Kind of the end of many storylines and the beginning of a slightly more mystical side to the story, which is why it dropped a little bit in my mind to a 7.5. Still good, but I kind of liked where they were going, and I don't know that I really am sold on where they're going from here. And finally, we have the return of Sleepy Hollow, Season 2, Episode 12, Paradise Lost. Ichabod and Abby meet Orion, an angel who may be able to help them in the aftermath of their showdown with Moloch. Meanwhile, Katrina isn't quite ready to give up on Abraham. This episode came in at an average of 6.75, so a tick below average there. And unfortunately, this show has not been having as good a second season. But there we are. When I can say, quite honestly, that angels have been done better on Supernatural. the best thing about Katrina is her wardrobe, because her character certainly doesn't have much to be desired. Yeah, there's not a whole lot going on in that show right now. It's kind of unfortunately spinning its wheels.
Yeah, and I will just toss in. I mean, I still think there's the continuing problem of two of the people who were featured in the opening credits and are two of the characters we were most intrigued by in the first season just still ain't doing much. That being the captain, and of course, you know, it seemed that maybe John Noble would be maybe getting a little more to do now that he's turned on Moloch and not just being the behind the scenes manipulator, but no, we're getting introduced to a different character instead.
Yeah, and quite frankly, some of the bad guys in this episode seem like they were extras off of a subpar Buffy episode. Mm-hmm. It really didn't work for me.
Yeah.
But that's it then, and we are going to go ahead and wrap up. Any last thoughts, guys, for this week? Gary, any last thoughts?
I'm really surprised how strong Agent Carter did come out of the gate. I was a little ambivalent as to where they're going to go with it, and I was pleasantly surprised in several aspects. I enjoy how much they're forcing the period into it, and I'm looking forward to more. As you said, Sleepy Hollow has been a bit of a disappointment and sadly continues to be so.
Edmund, any other last thoughts for you?
No, other than I think I'm ready for things to ramp up again, and they will be in the next week or two.
That's true. And Bronstom, I see here, is muted, but hopefully he can drop in with his last thoughts if he's listening.
He's listening. He's out.
Any last thoughts for this week?
TV is definitely coming back.
Yes, yes, indeed. And yeah, we have a lot of things premiering again next week, so we'll have to see how long it takes for things to ramp up to full speed. But yeah, between now and May, it's a really packed run.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, But there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.